Do you know a veterinary professional who goes above and beyond? Whether it's a veterinarian, technician, practice manager, or rising star, now's the time to recognize their impact. Nominations for the 5th Annual Veterinary Heroes Awards are open through April 30th. Help celebrate the individuals making a difference in veterinary medicine. Submit your nomination today at dvm360.com. Let's honor the heroes among us.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast, leveling up end-of-life care, excellence, compassion, and guess what? The future of veterinary hospice. And you know what? We have not talked about this on the show before, so I'm really interested in learning more about it. And joining us are our wonderful colleagues, Dr. Chelsea McGivney and also Dr. Tyler Carmack in the house. How are you, friends?
We are well.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
As we're recording, we're just talking about the weather because it's starting to get a little nicer out as we're entering spring. And Tyler, I know you're in Virginia Beach, so you're getting a little nice weather over there.
Yeah. Sun's out. We're happy.
That's right. And Chelsea, you're in New Mexico. How's it over there?
That's right. A little windy where I live, but overall sunny and nice.
Nice. Excellent. Okay. So yeah, we're going to chat a little bit about this and a little information about our wonderful colleagues. Dr. Chelsea earned her DVM from Colorado State University. Go
Rams.
There it is.
Go Rams.
Her diverse veterinary career includes completing a small animal internship, working as an ER and general practitioner, serving as an in-home end-of-life care veterinarian, and working in the pet food industry as a veterinary consultant for a leading company. This unique blend of experience prepared her for her role as general manager at Caring Pathways, where she leads a dedicated team of at-home end-of-life specialists, and her deep passion for the human-animal bond, which I love so much, allows her to combine her professional expertise with her love of veterinary care to support families during some of life's most tender moments, as we all have been there. So thank you for what you do, both of you. And Dr. Carmack is the Director of Hospice and Palliative Care for Caring Pathways. She founded Hampton Roads Veterinary Hospice, an AHA-accredited end-of-life practice, and has practiced exclusively hospice and palliative care since 2011. She served on the board of directors of the International Association for Animal Hospice and Palliative Care since 2016 in various roles, including president in 2020 and 25. Dr. Tyler holds certifications in animal hospice and palliative care, veterinary pain management, peaceful euthanasia, veterinary acupuncture, TCBM food therapy, and TCBM end-of-life care. And TCBM stands for?
Traditional Chinese Veterinary Medicine.
There it is. Yes, good. Okay, so doctors, let's chat about this because, you know, sometimes we have, I don't know, sometimes we get confused, overwhelmed. Maybe it's like a faux pas. We don't want to talk about these things, but you know, let's start with this, Tyler. Like, let's highlight how hospice and palliative care strategies can, you know, significantly improve the quality of life for pets with chronic illnesses or nearing the end of life. It's come a long way where we were, say, even 5 years ago to where we are now. So share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really been interesting to watch hospice and palliative care grow and really focus on being proactive about quality of life and maintaining comfort and mobility and independence as our pets sort of transition from being those healthy adult pets to more senior, needing a little bit more care, and then into geriatric and true end-of-life care, and really focusing on education of pet families so they know what to look for when that quality of life is starting to slip and doesn't become a new normal that isn't where they want it, and how to reach out, how to get help when they are scared to ask the questions that they may not want the answers to, and how we can help ease that conversation and really get them to embrace what they can do to maximize their pet's quality of life at home.
Chelsea, I mean, you've been practicing for a while now too, and have you seen the change for the better, I would say, with how we're treating geriatrics and hospice care?
Absolutely. I was actually just having a conversation about that with a colleague this morning, that even from when I started with Caring Pathways back in 2021, the way that we've been able to level up our care for these pets, and not just for them, but for the families that love these pets, has been incredible. And when Dr. Tyler joined our team, she really helped everybody understand how to take that care to the next level. And so I think we do an amazing job of supporting the families that actually reach out to us, but where we struggle is getting the regular veterinarian to make that referral, right? To understand the value in sending their clients to a service like Caring Pathways, where maybe they've reached the end of their treatment rope or their knowledge base, and then being able to send it to experts who know how to support that family in this last phase, is where we could really, I think, partner with vet clinics to support the clients and their patients.
I like that you shared that. It is a partnership. I know at our practice that I was at before I was here at DVM360, we had 12 doctors, and sometimes we were just so busy, and you wanted to dedicate the time that you needed to. It may not have been a euthanasia time, but it might have been more of a palliative quality of life, to your point, Chelsea, right? And I think having that partnership in veterinary medicine is so crucial because your clients don't want to feel rushed. They want to make sure that they're making that final decision. So do you find that that partnership is really valuable with where we're at now in this day of age in vet med?
Yeah, absolutely. We know that regular vet clinics, regular GPs, they don't have the time to have these slowed down, extended, conversations with these families, whereas our average appointment time is 1 to 2 hours to have one conversation with a family about where's your pet at now? What are your goals for them? What are your goals for yourself? And what plan can we put together to make sure that we're supporting everybody, always keeping that pet's quality of life front and center? So absolutely. And sometimes we end up referring back to the regular practitioner based on the client's goals and how their pet is doing. So it truly is, we approach it as a partnership, and just wish that more people would think of us as sort of those end-of-life care specialists, right? If you've reached the end of your knowledge, with regards to how to support this pet, send it over to the specialists.
Right. And hopefully, with a podcast like this and all your great education that Caring Pathways is providing will help, move that momentum a little bit further, because it definitely needs to happen. And Tyler, I'm curious about the human animal bond. It has changed, I think, for the better with where we are now. Like, we really have such great joy with it, but it can be significantly stressed or sometimes reinforced during end of life care, and this can open or close doors to future pet adoptions. So share with us about what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think the human animal bond is such a powerful force. And when emotions are so high and we're dealing with so many different family members with the same pet and so many different relationships, it can be really difficult because everybody takes in information, makes decisions differently. And so part of our role is to try to get that family on the same page. And so usually the primary caregiver is the one that may feel that human animal bond being really stressed and maybe even other relationships in the house being stressed because of the amount of caregiving that they're having to do for their pet. And so we really want to look at what we can do to change our treatment plan, to incorporate things, like massage and some hands-on therapies that can help reinforce that bond and provide comfort to the pet. But not put additional strain on that primary caregiver and help open communication about that because we hear so much, either at euthanasia appointments, but even during this caregiving process that, at the time, families are not willing to go through this again because it's so hard. They pour so much love and so much effort and so much time into these pets. And when we do have a strain on that relationship, it can be hard to justify doing that again. And so, if we can help lessen that burden and create a bit more closure and make this a true end-of-life experience for the family instead of an event that they remember in sort of a traumatic way, I think we can help with that grieving process and maybe make them a little bit more open to going through that for future pets and other sort of family members will be open to that in the future.
Yeah, I love that you shared that. One of my good friends is a human gastroenterologist, and when I had to put his dog Sophie down, he says to me to this day, and this was 5 years ago, he said it was the hardest thing that he has ever experienced in his life. And he deals with end of life on the human side, and I'm sure many
Sure.
listeners and you as well can attest, when you have like human nurses and human physicians, they feel that. And he said to me, he's like, never again, never again, I can never go through this again. Well, 6 months later, Adam, somebody like grace into our lives a little bit. And he's like, my wife said, I was just gonna look, at the animal shelter. But like they do the picking. It's like the wand from Harry Potter, like the paw comes out through the door and then it's done. So,
Absolutely.
right. But I share that because it sometimes it may never happen to your point because the human animal bond is so precious. And sometimes a new chapter unfolds. And that's what I love that Caring Pathways is there for you for that end of life and to have those discussions where maybe we're so busy. And, Chelsea, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the culture of Caring Pathways and the importance of providing that intentional support in times of being like a fully remote slash mobile practice. So share with the listeners about that.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, Caring Pathways, because it is fully remote, we don't have the benefit of your traditional general practice where you get together with your colleagues every day. You're able to lean on each other through those difficult appointments, in between appointments, getting that emotional support, or even getting like immediate feedback or training on how that appointment went or where, where can I improve? Everybody's sort of on their own. So the way that we try to stay very, very connected is we use Slack. Hopefully everybody sort of heard of Slack as an application to be able to stay connected. But we're so intentional with our communications. The work that we do, it's so filled with grief and clients who are in this really heavy grief state that you're just around grief all day long. And I think it's surprising to people, veterinarians and pet owners alike, how can someone do this all day long? And the truth is that it's a really rewarding job, right? You're able to provide this beautiful service and help these clients say goodbye or help ease that, burden, the caregiver burden that they're dealing with towards in that really difficult phase. And so being able to do that is rewarding and our clients are amazing. But I think it can take its toll on our team, right? Just having to deal with it's like de doing a euthanasia appointment over and over all day long. But if you're able to see sort of the joy in that and then also get the support from your team and your colleagues very intentionally, right? Being able to share struggles through Slack and get that immediate support. And we also have a grief support specialist right on staff, not just for our clients, but for our team to help through those harder days and those harder times. I think that's how we're able to maintain a culture of positivity and connectedness, even in the face of everyone working remotely and doing what's seemingly a very hard, sad job all day long.
When you're talking, I was just thinking to myself, we talk about that burden that we've all been, every one of us has felt that burden. But when you're so busy and the fact that you can, provide, because I always feel like when I'm working like a 12, 13 hour day and I have some clients that I would love to dedicate to your point about that time. But also for my own mental health, I may not be the best Adam Christman at 7 p.m. than I was at 7 a.m. So maybe, referring the case over to you would be good. So that way you're giving them the undivided attention. Have you, Chelsea, have you heard that from other doctors before? Like I'm glad I referred because of that. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I would say, one of the biggest benefits of referring those kind of draining types of
Yeah.
cases and draining types of clients to a service like ours is that you can keep your energy as a GP or as a practice in general high for the puppy appointments, for the wellness appointments and for those clients who come in with just a sick pet who really needs your full attention and energy to get them back on track. We, like I said, our appointment lengths are long so that we can dedicate the time that's really needed to give these pets and the clients the attention and the compassion and the dignity that they all deserve during this really rough time.
Yeah, it is a rough time. And having those difficult conversations, Tyler, is certainly challenging. Sometimes you don't know what to say, how to say, because everyone processes grief differently. So, what are some pieces of advice you would give when you're starting that conversation with clients and proactively seeking out comfort care measures versus scrambling in a crisis?
Yeah, I mean, I think we do such a good job of educating our families for their puppy and kitten visits, how they're going to set those pets up for their best life with their new family, right? We have all kinds of programs dedicated to that and educational resources. I think the same can be really beneficial for our adult senior geriatric pets because Most of the time, pet families just don't know what they're looking for, and they sort of chalk it up to, oh, he's older, so he's, not doing the stairs anymore. He's not in the middle of the family anymore, and he can't really hang the way he used to in the middle of family gatherings. But if we can be really proactive so that families are coming to us and saying, I've really noticed some of these things you mentioned, and I'm worried that he might be in pain. That conversation goes a lot differently than them coming in and saying, oh no, he's not in pain. He's just a little bit tired, and he's just a bit older, and I have to find a way to kind of navigate and say, but what you're seeing is pain. And so the more we can educate, I think, ahead of time before emotions get involved, the easier that conversation is going to be. And then I think just focusing on their pet's comfort, and that being the ultimate goal. Everybody wants their pet to be comfortable. Nobody wants their pet to have any sort of discomfort or pain. And so as long as you can establish that and that you're on the same page, we can kind of ease into services that, traditionally focus on end of life care, but doesn't have to mean that the end is near. It just means we're being proactive about comfort in those last stages.
I want to share with you two pieces of advice that I've learned. One a couple years ago, and the other one not that long ago, actually. And a couple years ago, I always say when I'm talking to clients, and even when I educate them virtually in social media or whatnot, I always say, like, I want your decisions from the heart to be smart. And I think sometimes we get overridden, right, with our emotions. We've all been there. Like, when my dachshunds go down for the count, I don't become a veterinarian. I become a crazy dog dad, you know? And so sometimes you just have to use a little bit of your emotional intelligence and not lash out on the veterinary team and, you know, really be make those decisions that are more reasonable and sound. And obviously having us to help counsel them in, but I do think it's important for pet owners to understand, like, we need our decisions from the heart to also be smart because, you know, they're living, breathing creatures. They're gonna pass away, just like all of us, you know? So that was one piece. The other piece, I'm curious to just get your thoughts on what I'm saying here too. I love rambling, by the way. Obviously, it's why we have a podcast. But one of our friends taught me this one too, and I really like this. And she said that, you know, we may suffer, but they never will. And, you know, we may suffer from their grief, we may hurt, but they never will hurt. And that's the beauty of our profession, is that we have humane euthanasia for them to cross over to be free from any pain or suffering. So I'm just curious, Tyler, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's an amazing conversation that we get to have, and we hear it almost every single day. I've gone through this with a human family member, and I can't believe we don't have this option for those loved ones. And so I think it really is something that everybody can embrace and understand, not wanting to put our pets through a day of suffering if we can avoid it. And it's interesting because that I think is very much the most common sentiment we hear, but we do have other cultures and different approaches that truly believe suffering is a part of life and may not be able to embrace euthanasia. And so being able to slow down and take the time and just make sure that everybody's on the same page with some of those conversations is really important too, because it's such a widely used tool in veterinary medicine. And I think in some ways, there may be some preconceived notions that hospice and palliative care doesn't utilize that tool or is being utilized to prolong suffering. And I would say, that's really the opposite of what we're about. Euthanasia is very much a tool of hospice and palliative care, but in those cases where that's not available to a family for whatever reason, it's also about providing as much comfort and maximizing quality of life as much as we can until that pet passes.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It is very nice. And Chelsea, I understand that Caring Pathways is the first practice to achieve the AHA EOLC specialty accreditation, demonstrating commitment to excellence. So tell us a little bit more about what that means.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully everybody listening has heard of AAHA before. And in 2021, they came out with a specialty accreditation for end-of-life care practices. So we just felt so honored to be able to walk through that accreditation process as the first end-of-life care practice, our Caring Pathways practice in Colorado. We passed. It was a lovely thing. And I think every time we get one of our new or our other practices accredited, and we're able to walk through that reaccreditation process, we pick up new nuggets. I think the AAHA team picks up new nuggets because they're not experts in end-of-life care, right? AAHA's been around for a long time and they've been leveling up care around general practice and things like that. And so we have an opportunity, having done this for so many years, to be able to share our expertise with them and make sure that that accreditation process is continuing to strive for excellence when it comes to in-home end-of-life care. And it's not just in-home. So AAHA does offer this specialty accreditation in brick and mortar practices if they have a service dedicated to end of life care. So there's sort of two directions you can go if you're interested in the end of life care AAHA accreditation. But just like with any other practice that pursues and achieves AAHA, it really is a demonstration of our commitment to excellence and making sure that we're providing the absolute best care in what we do to our clients and to our patients.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, I didn't even know that existed until we were chatting about this actually from AAHA. So it's a great, just again, just keep elevating the standard of care even more. You know, sometimes you hear like, you put some, an animal in room two and you just hear all the chaos that's going on and it's just stressful and they're right smack in the middle of everything. And maybe that's all they can do because of the design of that practice. So knowing that there's these offerings now that are available for their final moments to be free from pain and fear, anxiety and stressors, I think that's great. And I guess too, Chelsea, I'm thinking, I'm calling you Chelsea as if like we're hanging, but I'm.
Fine, all good.
By the way, my queen ween's name is Chelsea, so it's a very good name. So that's why I called her
It.
Chels, you know. But
I get
she's no longer with us. But it was it's a very powerful name here in this household. So.
it. Good. Glad to hear
Yes.
it.
But I know we were talking earlier about the benefits of GP practices, referring in-home end of life practices that you trust, and I guess that falls in line with some of what we're just chatting about. Like you're busy, you want it to be beautiful, memorable, impactful. What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely. So you hit on something that is also near and dear to our hearts, and that's creating like a stress-free experience. So every one of our doctors is actually fear-free certified. Our veterinary technicians are as well. So we are really just striving for that amazing experience. And that's what we do. We aren't just coming in and having an appointment, right? We're trying to create an experience because we know this is going to be the family's last memory, oftentimes with their pet. And we don't want it to be traumatic, and we don't want it to be scary for the pet or the family. We want them to know what to expect. Our team is incredible about communicating, what they're going to be doing, what the family can expect with regards to the different medications that we're administering. And it really is striving every time to provide a peaceful experience for something that is, ultimately very sad. But if we're able to provide it in a way where this family has some sort of positive association with saying goodbye, we've done our job, I would say.
Yeah, I really have. To the listeners tuning in and to my lady friends here, how many thank you cards have you gotten over the years from dealing with end of life care? I wish I had a thank you card for giving a rabies vaccine, you know?
Totally. Well, and that was, to my earlier point, that it's a very rewarding job. We get more thank you cards than I ever got as a general practitioner or as an emergency vet saving lives, right? You just
Right.
people remember that experience and they want to go above and beyond to express their gratitude. So we've lost count of the thank you cards, but thank you for asking. But if you are curious about people's feedback, I would encourage you to go and look at our Google reviews. We have hundreds and hundreds of people just sharing about their experience and what a benefit it was to them to be able to have that experience in the comfort of home.
Yeah.
I think
Yes.
too, we get a lot of families that are really thankful to their veterinarian if they're the ones that send them to us, because you in general practice work so hard at those relationships and you know those pets, hopefully sometimes for their whole lives. And I've certainly had families schedule with me not because they didn't want to be at their regular vet or their pet didn't like the regular vet, but they wanted to preserve that relationship as sort of their ongoing doctor relationship. And I even had a client who had her general vet was a mobile practice, and so there was no reason they couldn't come out and be at home and create a very similar experience. But they didn't want that experience to be with her because they had four or five other pets, and they wanted to maintain that as a different relationship. And so it really can impact all of our relationships in meaningful ways.
Tyler, you hit the nail on the head about something. And again, we never chatted about this. And I don't think I ever talked about this either. My gosh, all these firsts on this podcast. I love this because you're right. Okay, I'll share this one story because obviously I love dachshunds. So a lot of my clients come see me with their dachshunds or whatever. And I always say that the DVM stands for Dachshund of Veterinary Medicine because I went to dachshund vet school, right? You know? So. But I had this one client where I put her, I've known her for 14 years from beginning to end. We put her beautiful dapple dachshund down. And whenever she saw me at the supermarket, she just broke down and cried, like hysterically cried. And that's okay, to the point where she actually left the supermarket because she didn't want to see me because it always was bringing back this memory of her and of her dog in that moment. And she said to me, she wrote to me one, like a couple of weeks later, and she's like, "I'm so sorry, I keep breaking down." She's like, "Every time I just think of this experience when we had to put Ava down." And I was like, "That's okay." But it's a great point, Tyler. We never talk about this. I know I don't, but they should sometimes see somebody else when they're that invested in their veterinarian. Like, I mean, you know my personality. Like, look at that. I just love their animal so much that they feel that they just they you're right. It's a hard emotional to describe, but it's very deep, very it's very emotional. They're crying and they don't want that to be that all the time. When they look at Adam, for instance, they want it to be with someone else potentially. So thank you for bringing that up. We never chatted about this.
Yeah,
Well, and it's
I think
not.
it's a very vulnerable moment for them,
Yes.
and it's just a different relationship. So I do, if I run into clients in the grocery store, I tend to hide a little bit because I don't want to be a trigger for
Yes.
that. But I want them to be able, they everybody, usually has wonderful things to say about their veterinary team, and they want to keep going back there for other pets or new pets. And so I love that I can help facilitate that.
There's research behind this as well, Adam. So the research shows that 20 to 25% of clients do not return to their vet hospital if they've had a pet euthanized there. So referring to an in-home end-of-life care service can save client relationships and save clients. Like you've probably heard clients come in, "I don't want to go in that room.
Yes.
I can't be have an association with that room. It's too sad." Some clients won't even enter the same clinic. So, some hospitals are losing clients when they aren't referring out or offering an alternative to doing that euthanasia in the hospital.
And
Yeah.
that's regardless of how well the euthanasia went. I'm sure you did a wonderful job, saying goodbye to Ava, but it's just such a core memory for people that it's hard to separate.
100%. I chatted with a human psychiatrist and she said the top five, one of the top five most traumatizing events is putting a pet down on a human for humans in general. And so she said that that end of life care experience has got to be white glove service, regardless of how it ends, because it's going to be the single most impressionable memory that they will ever have for their life. Because we all could talk about, we all know what it was like when we put our cat down or dog, whatever that is. And we're all veterinary professionals, but to the pet owners out there, that's all they can think about sometimes. And sometimes they can't get over that. And that's where, counseling comes into play. Nothing wrong with that. But it was interesting for her to say that it is the top five most significant, impactful memories that can happen in one's life.
Definitely. And we understand that. And that's why we do provide additional grief support resources. We have, workbooks that we provide to each of our families to help, do self-work through what they're experiencing. And as I mentioned, we have a grief support specialist on staff, and we offer a complimentary session with her with every single client we have, not just after euthanasia, but for our clients who might be enrolled in our hospice or comfort care services, because they're dealing with some really tough emotions through that anticipatory grief, just knowing what's coming, or maybe the care caregiver burden has become very heavy. We want to
Yeah.
support these clients every step of this end of life journey and really walk with them.
Yeah, and I mean, we can keep going talking about this, but this is such a great conversation because sometimes there's a connection to that. Their spouse, that's the only thing that they have left to before they cross on over. There's so many memories that can happen. And oftentimes, from my experience, when I do at-home euthanasias, they want to be home with them. We had a pretty senior, older clientele, and that happened often. And they always wanted to be like in her husband's chair that has passed, or his wife's bed, like areas that just really meant really special to them that you wouldn't be able to do in a veterinary setting. So, big shout out to what you and your team are doing out there. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, Tyler, where can we learn more?
Caringpathways.com is a great place to start. We have a for vet professional page. And so some of the things that we do that might be a little bit outside the box or just tools that we like and can share, there's lots of resources available. And then also ihpc.org. The Hospice Association has a ton of educational materials, and anybody looking to get started sort of in this field or learn more about what services are in their area, that's a great place to start too.
Dr. Chelsea McGivney, Dr. Tyler Carmack, thank you so much for sharing your time with us. This is really good. This is
It's
good.
been
Thanks for
great.
having
Thanks,
us.
Adam.
Right? I think we need to call Billboard. I think we just dropped a hit.
Yeah.
Love
Thanks for
it.
being not afraid to talk about hospice and palliative care.
No,
That's right. Yeah.
absolutely. It's part of what we do all the time in this profession. And
Yep.
I'm glad that there is no stigma associated with this. This is a great conversation that we're having. So thank you for sharing this. We needed this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's our
Yeah.
pleasure.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. This is wonderful. Don't forget to rate the podcast as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.